Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. American Theater Company has continued a long tradition in Tulsa of presenting Shakespeare in a summer outdoor setting. That tradition has rested mostly on productions of A Midsummer Night's Dream. But in recent years, ATC has presented more of Shakespeare's comedies. This year, it's Shakespeare's The Comedy of Errors, with its two sets of twins with mistaken identities and slapstick farce. Comedy of Errors have inspired countless sitcom plots, musicals, movies, and plays. In fact, ATC's production follows up on a hip-hop version, The Bombity of Errors, that ATC presented earlier this year. American Theater Company presents The Comedy of Errors by William Shakespeare on the lawn at Philbrook Museum this Friday and Saturday and next Friday and Saturday at 8 o'clock. I'm joined by stage director Lisa Wilson. Lisa Wilson, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Rich.
Well, what better time to do an outdoor production in Tulsa?
Everybody likes the heat. You know, we pride ourselves on records here in Tulsa.
Well, actually, you're doing it in the shade of Philbrook, which is very important. This production follows up on, it's an interesting concept by American Theater Company, because they did The Bombity of Errors, which is sort of an updated hip-hop version of The Comedy of Errors. And now you're doing the original. I think that is a great thing. So are you hoping to see the same audiences that came out for The Bombity?
Well, I hope some of the same audiences will come, but I certainly hope some people who like Shakespeare then will want to come and see that just for that sake. But people who like sitcoms, I hope they come and see it, because Comedy of Errors is your basic farce sitcom. If you like I Love Lucy, if you liked The Three Stooges, if you liked Jackie Gleason and the Honeymooners, if you liked, Mary Tyler Moore and Dick Van Dyke, if you liked Archie and Edith, if you liked any of the sitcoms that you may have seen on television, these are archetypal characters. And, you know, this is Raymond and his family at times. This is middle-class people. Shakespeare knew what he was doing. And
I remember an E! Weekly article where they used Barbie dolls and Ken dolls to illustrate the 10 plots of situation comedies. And there were only 10.
That's about it.
And probably nearly all of them came from Shakespeare.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And he borrowed them from somebody else, because this comes originally from a play called The Twin Menachemy. And then he added two more twins, because he's Shakespeare and he can, and did it in iambic pentameter plus some prose. But so he adds two more twins. So he's got two sets of twins in this, so we can have double the fun of double the mistaken identity and double the, you know, I mistake your servant, I mistake the husband, I have the sister of the wife fall in love with the brother that's not the husband, and the wife thinks that the sister's stealing, the husband thinks that the... So it's quite fun, and we've set it down for our production rather than being in ancient Greece, which is where he had originally written it, Syracuse versus Ephesus. You probably know the Rodgers and Hart Boys from Syracuse.
Right, uh-huh.
There was that version of it, and the musical. We've set this down in the 1950s and put a few musical numbers in it ourselves. We have a musical Luce and Courtesan, who sings short ditties, but they are quite fun that she's worked into the show.
Are they sung in iambic pentameter?
I don't think so. But then again, Shakespeare played fast and loose with his anachronism, so we take our cue from him. So in our 1950s, we have, although it's in Greece, we have a couple of New York dialects, and we have a wonderful merchant from Persia who's a little bit threatening with his knife that he does a few tricks with. And it's delightful. It pulls out all the stops. And we hope that people will come and simply be entertained. The cast members are fabulous. They are a company who are so supportive and so good and so funny. These people are so inventive. They've been working for 5 weeks, and we've been out at McClure, which very graciously the Tulsa Public Schools has let us rehearse at, which has been a good training ground, because we've been in the gymnasium, which is air-cooled but not air-conditioned, if we want to put it that way. So it's been in the 80s or so in the gymnasium. So we began to get our sea legs there. And to
perform outside, it's even with body miking, it's a different animal.
Oh, and we're not body miked. No. This is miking that's done very well, as they did last year with Taming the Shrew. Uh-huh. It is carefully placed mics that are put around on the permanent stage that's designed by Richard Ellis that has some new stage pieces that are for this show, some new scenery, so that they're strategically placed so that they just simply enhance the sound. They have to project just as they would in any theater. They just have sound enhancement. They tell me that last year on the final show, there were close to 700 people there, and they could all hear. And they're adding some more speakers further out because they think that with this being a more of a comedy, they may have between 800 and 1,000 on the final night. It is very funny. It's, you know, fall, hit you on the head, do slaps, do that kind of, it's the kind of comedy that my husband likes, where, you know, he'll rerun the channel to watch the guy fall down 6 times.
Well, for those who are not familiar with the Comedy of Errors, we kind of mentioned the fact there are two sets of twins. Mm-hmm. Basically, the story is a nobleman from Syracuse is detained. He's trading.
He's a merchant.
Mm-hmm. And he comes to Ephesus, and that's forbidden.
Yeah.
So he's detained.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's curtains unless he can come up with a ransom.
Yeah. He is the merchant from Syracuse, but he is in search of his son and the bondsman who is with his son. And the bondsman are both twins. They were separated at birth from their respective twins who were lost on a shipwreck where pirates took the other set of twins and the mother. Haven't seen them in 25 years. Okay. So at age 18, they went off to seek them.
And wouldn't you know they'd be in Ephesus?
Well, you know. Dad went looking for him 5 years ago, and so he's been roaming the bounds of Asia, China, whatever, and his last trip has taken him into Ephesus where, gee darn, there is a law that says anybody who shows up on the shores of Ephesus who is from Syracuse dies if they can't put up 1,000 marks to buy their liberty. Well, he's kind of down to his last, you know, he's in our version, he tries to auction things off to the audience. So bring your ducats, kids. You might be able to bail him out. We're selling, you know, pieces of antiquities of Asia as he goes around to try to help him out.
So it sounds like you guys have put your own spin on this a bit. I mean, so obviously you're not a purist when it comes to Shakespeare as far as how you said it and where you said it.
Well, I think that with Shakespeare, the point is that it's meant for the audience of its time. And when Shakespeare said it, the majority of the clothing, for example, that was on the stage were given to him, were taken from houses of nobles of that time and period. Now, it was something that was specifically set, like Julius Caesar, and they did Roman robes, they did something that was a costume-like costume. But the point of costumes is to suggest character. So what we've done is go for the archetype of the character. We want to make sure that you understand who these people are. So what we've tried to do is say, okay, what's a time period in which men are still the patriarchs?
Mm-hmm.
Men are still, like in the Mad Men society, they're still going to be the rulers of the house.
There's going to be class distinctions.
There's class distinctions. The housewife is still whining that the guy's out cheating on her, and we don't expect the feminist to go out and take care of it herself.
Right.
Because it's a different time. So the 1950s worked for us in this way. Plus the kind of comedy that came out of the Lucille Ball comedy, the comedy that we think of from the 1950s on television into the early 60s, that kind of screwball comedy and physical farce is imprinted in our brains and even in the younger people's brains because they've watched it and watched reruns. And, you know, the Three Stooges movie has just been out or is coming out or whatever. So it continues to be something that is imprinted in our brains.
Right. And you mentioned the Three Stooges, mm-hmm. and we don't think of Shakespeare and the Three Stooges in the same breath. But in this particular piece, you know, the very first scene, Antipholus of Syracuse uh-huh. sends his servant, Dromio, to go find a place to stay. Uh-huh. And the other Dromio shows up and says, did you do it? No, I didn't.
What do you mean?
And,
you
know, and it's Moe and Curly.
Yeah, it's Moe and Curly again. Yeah, exactly. It is. It's the same basic thing. What do you mean? What? I did. I didn't. I didn't. I didn't. I didn't. I didn't. You know. Yeah, and it is the same thing. So we borrow from that. So we're giving a nod to the fact that what we laugh at now very specifically and what we laughed at in 1950s is not new. It's as old as Shakespeare. It's as old as the Greek comics. As Punch and Judy, yeah. Which was as old as the Greeks, because Plautus wrote the Menachmi, so they were laughing at the same things then.
No. Now, I assume you don't have two sets of twins.
So, no, we don't. So I have a twin in the production, but he's not playing one of the twins.
So how do you make that distinction for the audience, or is it just implied and
it's done through costuming and through a nod to, I mean, there's a familiar, similar build, mm-hmm. and we do it through costuming and through hair similarity, and we're using a little bit of change of hair color with using a little bit of brown spray to take our redhead down to brown and and take our blonde down to brown so that we move them closer together, and we curl the one fellow who has wavy hair because the fellow who has curly hair, he's going to be hot and it's going to be curly.
You know, it's interesting. As I think about the two sets of twins, it's like you want them to look alike, but you want them to be enough different so that you know that when Dromio 1 leaves, it's Dromio 2 coming in. And that's sort of an interesting
thing. We want the audience to be smarter than the characters on the stage. That's the key to comedy.
Yeah.
The people on the stage must be embroiled in a very serious matter that is driving them along. And in a farce, to the extent that they become engaged in the machine. So it's like I Love Lucy in the Chocolate Factory. Any sane person who worked in a chocolate factory, if
wouldn't
the guy came
to,
in and said, I'm going to speed it up now, would not say, oh, yeah, I'm doing fine, and start sticking the chocolates, you know, down the front of her dress and in her mouth and all over the place. She would go, I'm not doing well yet. I don't know what I'm doing. But in a farce, you don't do that. In a farce, you go, oh, yeah, sure, I can handle it. And you let the machine begin to run your life. And that's what happens in that kind of comedy is you get desperate and therefore everything takes over and you don't step back and use logic. Well, we're so wise in the audience that we look at this and go, oh, I see what's going to happen. Oh, so certainly we want them to know that that's not the right Dromio. That's not the right Antipholus. We want to be smarter.
Right. Yeah. Right. And of course, one of that great anticipations mm-hmm. is to see what's coming. Mm-hmm. And then as, you know, a director and actors, uh-huh. You change that moment a little bit, so it's not exactly what you expect, but it's even funnier.
Oh yeah, 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 and you hope that the payoff in the end. Yeah, we've played with the payoff in the end when they meet, when they see each other, when they figure out what we've known all along. You know, when they finally go, oh gee, this is what happened. You know, we're going, yeah. You know, but we enjoy that for them. And when they're arguing their point of view and you go, oh, my God, how many times have I done that where I've sat there and told somebody, no, 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 this is what happened. And they're going, no, 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 I was there. This is what happened. And you laugh at them because you go, uh-oh, I've been this person. And that's why we laugh. We yeah. recognize. We go, this is me. In mm-hmm. some instances, this is me.
My guest today is Lisa Wilson, who's directing American Theater Company's production of The Comedy of Errors by William Shakespeare. If you remember, earlier during the year, they did an updated version of the comedy called The Bombity of Errors as part of their indoor season. Now in their outdoor season at Philbrook, on the lawn at Philbrook, they'll be presenting The Comedy of Errors Friday and Saturday, and again next Friday and Saturday. And this is a great tradition. American Theater Company did The Taming of the Shrew last year. I think next year they're planning on doing The Merry Wives of Windsor.
Right.
These great Shakespeare comedies outside. And, of course, that's a great tradition in America.
Oh, yeah. Outside theater. Most major cities have a wonderful tradition of outside theater. And ATC has done them a great service by building a platform stage that they can now use as the base. And it was so nice to know that that was going to be there. And from that, then we could say, oh, well, let's add this little bit. Oh, gee, when I talked to Richard Ellis, who's a designer, I could say, well, can we add this scenic piece so that we can have the famous door scene where you get to see both of the Dromios on each side of the door? And he went, oh, yeah, great, sure, we can do that, because we weren't having to build from scratch. So that's fabulous. It gives them a secure place to perform on, and they're not on uneven ground. And it gives us levels, and it sets something down so that we're on that lovely front lawn where they have all the weddings at Philbrook, and where there's beautiful shade. And it's such a nice setting, and you're away from the traffic, and it's idyllic. It's just perfect to sit there. And there's the Philbrook cat who comes out and joins us now, and he walked through the love scene the first night we were there. And then he came out and sat down and took a bath and watched the next couple of scenes. And last night he came out and sat on my blanket and watched the whole show. So his name happens to be Bill. So I'm wondering, you know, if he has a spirit come with him.
And, of course, if the cat walks through the love scene, that makes it all the more fun.
That's right. You just keep on acting.
Well, how do you prepare? You said you were in McClure, which is sort of a gymnasium sort of atmosphere, but you know, it is hot out there. And even though it'll be cooler once you start performing, you know, in the evening, I would think a slapstick comedy where you're really, really working hard and moving.
Hydrate.
Hydrate. Is that simple?
Hydrate. Yeah. We haul out ice and water bottles, and I do laundry every night of some kerchiefs and handkerchiefs and some towels and stuff that need to go home every night that, you know, some of the folks don't are younger and don't do wash all the time, and I don't mind doing it. You know, I've been a mom forever. So, you know, I go home and throw it in the load, and it's fine. And, you know, because you got to mop as you go. You can't have sweat dripping in your eyes. You can't see. So you simply incorporate that into the character and into what you're doing. You deal with the reality of what's going on there. And it's grease. It's summertime. Mm-hmm. It's hot. You're running around. You're hot. You put it in the character. So you do that. You incorporate what you're doing. But we rehearsed for 5 weeks so that they built up their endurance and they've built back up their lung power. And we worked a lot with the verse, learning it in the verse style, because I firmly believe if you learn the verse as verse line, you'll have enough lung power to be able to actually perform it, plus you'll learn the structure. And you also learn it, of course, by the thought, and you learn lots of other things with antithesis, and you learn all those other discovery things that are within the little magic Dakota rings of what Bill wrote. But you learn it so that you've got all the power underneath you that actor needed, because that's the way he wrote it.
It sounds like when, you know, we were talking about, you know, what liberties you take with it. Mm-hmm. You can take liberties with setting. You can take liberties with actually inserting gags into the middle of it. But the text is still, it's still.
I start with the text.
Yeah.
I, the text is still my base, and the text is still what we come back to. And I continue to honor the text. I believe in the text. That is the root. And we keep coming back to it because it is what gives us the foundation. And, you know, there are many things that say an adaptation. There's a production being done right now out at Oregon Shakes that is The Merry Wives of Windsor, Ohio. And I looked it up online because I thought, ooh, that sounds really interesting. And I thought, well, how in the world do you move Merry Wives to Windsor? And what they really did, a rewrite, and made it a political campaign in which the Mayer is a lesbian married to somebody, and they rewrote the thing. They took it as a spinning off point, much like Bomedy.
Right.
Okay. So they made another play out of it. And that's a different thing than a production of William Shakespeare's Comedy of Errors, where we sit it down.
The text has to still be there.
Yeah, the text is there.
And even though you may be, you know, far removed from the actual sort of scene of it,
wherever Syracuse and Ephesus were, which wasn't exactly where Syracuse and Ephesus really were historically anyway.
And the text still works, even in that sort of slapstick environment.
Absolutely. It was slapstick then.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Oh, when they go through, it's like dealing dozens. When they go on either side of the door and they're doing fart jokes at each other. And they are. It's written. They're fart jokes. And they're doing those at each other through the door. And they're doing all these rhymed couplet jokes back and forth. That's like yo mama jokes. It's
and that's the thing about it is
it
is wonderful language, but it's a lot of base language in this because I think there's a description of a woman and the country's
The woman well we cut part of that out we cut part of that because part of that you just kind of go they're not going to get that so as I go through the text if my what section goes off as a director I go if I'm going to have to explain if I have to look it up and really look it up and can explain it and I can't explain it to the actors then we can't do that so. I did some judicious cutting. It's not a long play anyway, but I made sure that I thought that at least 50% of the audience could get the verbal jokes and that everything that we did hopefully could be elucidated with the physicalization so that when we talk about Luce and how big she is, we can do graphic physical things about her size, her being as tall as she is wide.
Yeah, right.
We can do things that explore that and make that clear. And she's already been on stage, so we know that. So that when he starts talking about her and envisioning her and then mocking her and making fun of her being bigger than she really is, we've got that, you know.
When you think of the comedies of Shakespeare, you know, a lot of them are incredibly funny, but there's usually a serious point to them. Is there a serious point in the Comedy of Errors?
Well, I think the serious point in the Comedy of Errors is that family is the most important thing you can have in your life. And if you don't prize it and value it, you will lose it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at what's going on in Antipholus of Ephesus' life, he's losing his family because of the way he's treating his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And this event that occurs with his brother showing up in search of, who feels like he's lost everything, he starts the play by saying, I'm losing myself because I've gone in search of a brother and a mother. And I've lost my father also in this search. I've been doing this for 7 years, and now I'm losing myself. But part of who you are is having your family. And I think that's his point.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the end, the joy is, we're all back together. So I think that's the harmony and the peace. And
that's
point.
That's pretty, you know, this is early Shakespeare, sort of a simple story.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And they get more complex as they go, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This one ties up in a nice, neat bow.
My guest today is Lisa Wilson, director of American Theater Company's production of The Comedy of Errors by William Shakespeare on the lawn at Philbrook for performances this Friday and Saturday and again next Friday and Saturday at 8 o'clock on the lawn. I guess it opens up for picnics at 6:30.
Mm-hmm.
And big crowds for this, which, you know, in August, Oklahoma, you wouldn't expect that. But, you know, people want to get out of doors and see something.
It does cool down. And when the sun has gone down to a certain extent and there's wonderful trees at Philbrook, once you're not in the direct sun, the heat is not bad. And do bring things to drink. And we're not checking what you bring. Keep it reasonable, but we're not checking what you bring. But keep cool and bring something that, you know, will keep you cooled off. So bring a nice wet towel to put behind your neck or something if you feel like you're going to need it. Bring a little shade if you feel like you're going to need it. They're going to spray the lawn, I know, to keep the bugs down. But if you're like me, I attract every single mosquito in Oklahoma. So I bring my little bug spray every night.
Now, tell us about the cast in our last couple of minutes.
The cast, they are from the community. And they are some people that you would know from ATC from before. Greg Boyd is playing Aegean. And I have some folks who are playing roles that I have not worked with before, Michael Fling. And my fun part of this is that I'm working with people that I have taught over the last 30 years and who have been alumni of TU, which is I'm working with Teresa Bringle, who is in the first class that I ever taught here. She is playing the mayoress rather than the duke. And I'm working with someone who was in the original production of this, who played Adriana for me, Genia Boutier, and she's now playing the abbess in this. Mm-hmm. She's fabulous. She teaches also out at Jinx and is just wonderful in this. I'm working with Devin Martin, who is one of the Antiphali, who has been who's been a graduate. And I'm working with Jeff Gaffin, who is a graduate, who's playing multiple roles. I'm working with Trey Barnett, who's still in school here. I'm working with Kristen Kennedy Bremer, who is a graduate from OSU, but was here in school and was mm-hmm. in a production for me of Twelfth Night. I'm working with people from across my lifetime here.
That must be a lot of fun.
Oh, it's a blast. It's an absolute blast. I didn't mention everybody's name, so forgive me. But it is an absolute blast, and they're terrific. I get to work with my daughter-in-law, my recent daughter-in-law, who is a graduate from here, Okchati Smith. And she's playing Adriana, and Sarah Beeson, who is playing Luciana, who is a graduate from here, and she's also a fight choreographer for us, thank goodness. And I'm working with our other Dromio. Alex Crawford's one of our Dromios, and our other Dromio is Ken Leap Sills, who is also a student here. They are such terrific people and such a good company. I've never seen such supportive people. Scott Schumann, who is the National Guard right now, who is was in one of my plays here long ago and far away and showed up to audition, and he's fabulous.
All right. Well, it sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun on the lawn at Philbrook this weekend and next. The Comedy of Errors by William Shakespeare. Lisa, thanks very much for joining
Thank
us.
Thank you.
Lisa Wilson is the stage director for American Theater Company's production of The Comedy of Errors by William Shakespeare, which will take place on the lawn at Philbrook Museum this Friday and Saturday and next Friday and Saturday at 8 o'clock. The gates open at 6:30. For ticket information, visit myticketoffice.com or the PAC box office at 918-596-7111. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed a previous episode of Studio Tulsa, you can listen online anytime at publicradiotulsa.org. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.